Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A lot of us seem to feel that there is not enough time to get done what needs to be done. If you're a working mother or a busy executive, we'll have some tips on how to make the most of your time. Life coach Jill Farmer joins us in just a couple of moments. But first, Washington's a busy place these days as the president and legislators try to get on the same page on key issues. Interestingly, they did this week on one item, naming the Mississippi River Bridge after Stan Musial. The Senate says yes, but what about the House? Let's ask the St. Louis Beacon's man in Washington, Rob Koenig. Rob, welcome. Nice to talk to you again.
Good morning, Don.
Well, that's the big question. The unanimous vote in the Senate on the Musial Bridge, Memorial Bridge, I guess I should say. What's this, the House going to do?
Well, I talked to Rodney Davis, who's the House sponsor. He's a congressman from Central Illinois. Actually, it extends all the way into Madison County, his district. He is on the Transportation Committee in the House, and he's introduced a bill with several co-sponsors that would have the same effect, that would name the bridge the Stan Musial Memorial Bridge. And he's hopeful that there'll be some action in the House committee in the next month or so. And I think once it gets to the floor of the House, there wouldn't be much opposition, if any.
Well, it was a rare display in the Senate of the two parties coming together, which we have not seen much of recently. How are things going on that front otherwise? The president has launched this charm offensive. He's meeting with Republicans and Democrats and virtually anybody who will sit down with him. How's it working?
Well, the president is meeting shortly, actually, for lunch with Senate Republicans, including Roy Blunt. And a couple of us talked to Roy Blunt about an hour ago, and he said he was looking forward to the meeting. He wasn't sure if much real progress would be made in terms of budget negotiations, but it's a welcome thing whenever the president comes over to Capitol Hill. Yesterday, the president met with Republicans in the House, and I talked to Congressman Blaine Lichtenmeyer, who represents a district that includes parts of St. Charles County. And he said it was a cordial meeting, and quite a few issues were brought up. And in general, he thought that even though it might not lead to any concrete agreements, that there's a clearing of the air, and the Republicans at least feel that he's interested in their points of view.
A clearing of the air, but everything that I've read here would indicate that the air may be somewhat clearer, but the resolve remains the same on both sides.
I think so. I mean, yesterday Senator Blunt was among, I think, every Republican senator who voted for an amendment to the continuing resolution, which would, you know, keep the government functioning, that would, in effect, repeal Obamacare. And they keep bringing this issue up time and time again. And I asked Senator Blunt today, isn't this beating a dead horse? And he said, no, Republicans feel strongly that in the end Obamacare will be costly to the government, that it won't solve the problem. So that's why they keep bringing it up. But it's just, he did recognize that while President Obama is in office, such an initiative isn't going to go anywhere.
It's, you know, you read the analysis of what's going on, and it's almost as if there are certain parties, if you will, in Washington who feel that the election really didn't mean anything.
Well, you saw Congressman Paul Ryan, who was the vice presidential candidate, reissued his budget proposal this week, and it's basically a rerun of the budget proposals he issued last year and the year before, and also the budget that the Romney-Ryan campaign ran on. So people at the press conference when he introduced it brought up the point, aren't you once again, you know, it's like Groundhog Day. You keep reintroducing the same budget, which voters, at least in general, rejected in the November election. And he said that the points are still valid. And obviously it's a position out there, and they're willing to compromise to some extent. But the House and the Senate are in two different worlds in terms of the budget.
And now we have a competing budget. Senator Murray of Washington has put out the Democratic proposal, and yet to come is the president's.
Yeah, well, we still haven't seen the president's budget, which is quite unusual this late in the process, in the second week of March. Patty Murray's budget proposal obviously involves more spending, proposals for more revenue than does the Republican alternative. It's likely to proceed in the Senate, assuming there aren't too many filibusters. And it's likely to die in the House. So somehow we'll get some sort of a budget or at least a continuing resolution that will keep the government functioning after March 27th.
And what about the sequester in the middle of all of this?
Well, the level of the sequester, the $85 billion in cuts, is going to remain, I think. Both Democrats and Republicans pretty much have conceded that. What could change is the way it's targeted. Right now, the sequester is an across-the-board cut, so each federal agency has to make its own decisions about how to cut a certain percentage of their budget. The idea now being debated in various amendments in the Senate is whether you can target some of that spending a bit more through specific appropriations bills. And I think there may be some progress in that. Senator Blunt is among a group of Republican senators who are trying to specify which positions in the federal government, such as air traffic controllers and meat inspectors, et cetera, should definitely not face any sort of furloughs, whereas there are other less important federal employees, perhaps, who could be furloughed one day a week, and the operations of the government wouldn't be greatly affected.
Okay, so stay tuned, as we like to say. Changing the subject here somewhat, Senator McCaskill is right in the middle of those hearings yesterday on sexual assaults in the military. What is she saying about all of that? I suppose we could assume what she has said, but what is she actually saying?
Well, she's quite angry about a recent incident at Aviano Air Base in Italy in which an airman, actually a lieutenant colonel, was convicted by a court-martial jury of a sexual assault there. And his superior, the commander of the base, unilaterally, which apparently is possible, vacated the conviction and reinstated him. And McCaskill said that this shows a severe flaw in the military code of conduct, which is the legal system under which the military works, and wants to revise that. She's introduced a bill, actually, yesterday that would revise that system to disallow commanders from doing this, at least in terms of sexual assault cases. Yesterday, there were several witnesses, victims of sexual assault in the military, including one whose story involved Fort Leonard Wood in Missouri. She had been assaulted, or raped, actually, in Afghanistan while on duty. And then when she came back to Fort Leonard Wood, she saw the attacker, who had never been convicted, and was quite upset, and then went to see the chaplain there. And the chaplain said, well, don't worry about it, just go to church more often. So she was quite upset about that. I think there will be some sort of legislation coming out of the Senate on this issue. Whether it'll get anywhere in the House, I don't know.
You know, we did a program yesterday on domestic violence and sexual abuse, and it was basically pegged to the Violence Against Women Act, which was just recently reauthorized. Does that have no application in the U.S. military?
I don't think it has direct application, no. I think the U.S. military code is a separate code of justice. I mean, obviously, many sexual assaults are indeed prosecuted in the military. However, Senator Gillibrand of New York gave a statistic yesterday saying that there were nearly 2,500 sexual violence cases in the military services in 2011. And only 240 of those actually made it to a trial. So many of the allegations are dismissed, and you know, perhaps for legitimate reasons. But the women, and actually one man testified who were victims of assault, claim that the process is unfair.
Again, I'm going to go to another subject here, Rob, and that would be former Congressman Costello. We've read in the last couple of days that he has decided not to come back home. He, like almost all of the rest of them, decided to stay on in Washington. What's he going to be doing there?
Well, he actually is, his main residence remains in Belleville. So technically he is back home, but he has established a consulting, in effect, a lobbying company called the Jerry Costello Group, LLC, which will be based, I think, both in Belleville and Washington. So he'll be traveling back and forth. Now, by law, when a congressman retires, he can't directly lobby his former colleagues for a year. That is a member of the House. And members of the Senate actually extends for 2 years. So even though he won't directly be lobbying, he'll probably be doing, he'll be advising clients probably on a major transportation issues, because he was a member of the House Transportation Committee, I think, for 24 years. He told me when I interviewed him in late December that he's also planning to teach at a couple of the local universities in Southern Illinois and perhaps also in St. Louis. So I don't think he's only doing consulting work.
But it just seems it's like Willie Sutton says, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Why do you stay in Washington? Because that's where the money is.
Well, when you look at the record, yeah. I mean, Senator Bond just recently, his 2 years is up of not being able to lobby, and he's now lobbying for the city of Kansas City here in Washington, and he has other clients. So, yeah, they all seem to gravitate in that direction because that's where their expertise is, and as you said, that's where the money is.
One final quickie question for you. Looking back at Senator Rand Paul's filibuster last week, that got a lot of attention. Do you think that could possibly lead to any change in this in the current filibuster process in the Senate?
Well, the reason it got attention is because it was an old-fashioned filibuster, right, where Rand Paul and a few colleagues actually got up and argued for, 13 hours or so. Usually what happens is it's sort of a fake filibuster. There's a threat of a filibuster, and that messes everything up in terms of the timetable of Senate business. So I think that even though many of the Democrats were upset that he talked for that long, it's not so much the real filibusters that bother Democratic leaders. It's these fake filibusters that have irritated them over the years, because it just eats up a lot of time and you don't have the dramatic arguments. One of the proposals is to require senators, who are threatening a filibuster to actually carry it out, as Rand Paul did. Mm-hmm. Now, on the question of the reason Rand Paul filibustered, which is to convince the administration to guarantee that drones would never be allowed, within the continental United States or within the U.S. in general to attack Americans, I think was a legitimate goal, and he eventually did get a letter, I think, from the Attorney General saying the president does not have such authority to order drones to attack. But whether that was worth 13 hours of the Senate's time, many disagree. But I don't know that there'll be any huge change in the filibuster rules, because the trouble is the Democrats could lose their majority in 2 years, and they'll be in a minority. And do they want to have agreed to have changed the filibuster process, which they may in turn start using again?
Rob Koenig, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for bringing us your valuable Washington insight to St. Louis on the Air. Nice talking to you.
Thank you, Don.
You can read Rob's reports in the St. Louis Beacon at stlbeacon.org. Making the most of your time. We'll be talking about that in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.